Chapter 2. Bligh. In the days before my journey to Bligh, my feelings had changed many times. I had been happy after I had accepted my new job as governess, but then I had had many doubts about what I had done. Had I made a mistake? My employer's conditions were so strange. Could I do my duty as he had asked? During the long journey by carriage on that beautiful June day, my doubts came and went. I was still anxious when the carriage stopped and I got out. Would I be able to do the job well? Would I become friends with the housekeeper, Mrs. Gross? However, after I got into the smaller carriage that had come to collect me from the village near Bligh, I began to feel better. It was nearly the end of the afternoon on a peaceful summer day. I remember arriving at a very large country house with two tall square towers, like the towers of a castle. It was a fine house with windows that opened onto a terrace and a beautiful garden with a big green lawn and bright flowers. Beyond the garden, there was a park with a lake, and I could hear the sound of birds in its tall trees. It was very different from the small country parsonage that I was used to. I was met at the front door by Mrs. Gross and the little girl, Flora. Mrs. Gross welcomed me as if I were an important visitor, and the child was charming. Mrs. Gross was a large, comfortable-looking woman, and Flora, with her blonde hair and blue eyes, was the most beautiful child I had ever seen. I wondered afterwards why her guardian had not told me how beautiful she was. When I saw the large bedroom that I was going to share with the little girl, I was amazed. I remember the enormous bed and seeing myself in a tall mirror. I had never been able to see myself from my head to my feet before. There was only one slightly strange thing on that first day. I noticed that Mrs. Gross seemed very glad to see me, but she was also trying hard not to let me see it. As the housekeeper and I ate supper that night by the light of four tall candles, I asked Mrs. Gross, "The little boy, does he look like Flora? Is he very extraordinary too?"
"Oh, yes, miss," she replied. "If you like this one, you will be carried away by the little gentleman. You will meet him in a couple of days when he returns from school."
"Oh, I think I came here to be carried away," I replied, adding, "I'm quite easily carried away. I was carried away in London." I can still see Mrs. Gross's wide face as she listened to what I said.
"When you met the master?" she asked.
"Oh, yes," I said.
"Well, miss," she replied, "you're not the first and you won't be the last."
"Oh," I said, laughing, "I don't expect to be the only one." I was too excited to sleep well that first night, and I got up several times before daylight came to wander around the room. But I could not be uneasy when I saw that beautiful little girl sleeping peacefully. Maybe I did shiver when I thought I heard someone outside my door. Maybe there was the cry of a child far away. But I only remembered these things about that particular night much later. I spent the next day in the company of Flora, who showed me around Bligh. The child with her golden hair and blue dress danced from room to room, along empty corridors and up and down stairs, and even to the top of one of the towers. I thought how confident and brave she was, and we became friends that day. But I did not feel as cheerful as I had just after I arrived. This was because the enormous size of the house made me understand the size of the job I had accepted. It was as if we were the only passengers on a huge ship, which I was now in charge of. At the end of that day, I felt this again very deeply because of a strange event. The post arrived late that day, and I was surprised to receive a letter from my employer. Inside was a short message from him and an unopened envelope with his name on. "This letter is from the headmaster of Miles's school, who is a dreadfully boring man," his message said. "Read it, please. Do what you need to do, but don't tell me anything about it." I was so nervous about opening the letter from the headmaster that it was a long time before I did. In fact, I took it to my room and only read it at last just before I went to bed. I was sorry that I read it then, because I had a second sleepless night. I felt very unhappy and uneasy, so finally I decided to talk to Mrs. Gross the next morning. She was only the housekeeper, but there was no one I could talk to except her. When I told her what the letter said, she did not understand me. "The child is being sent home from his school? What does it mean? Aren't all children sent home for the holidays?" "Yes," I said, "but only for the holidays. Miles can never go back at all. He has been expelled from school." She looked at me in a strange way, but when I noticed this, she seemed to try and make her face look normal.
"They won't let him go back?"
"No, never," I replied. When she heard this, I saw her eyes fill with tears.
"What has he done?" she asked.
I decided that the best thing to do was to give her the letter to read. I held it out to her, but she just put her hands behind her back and shook her head.
"I can't read, miss."
I felt uncomfortable because of my mistake and quickly put the letter in my pocket. "Is he really bad?" I asked her. She did not reply. Then, with tears still in her eyes, she asked,
"Does his headmaster say so?"
I told her about the letter. "He doesn't give any more information. He just says that he is sorry, but it is impossible to keep Miles there. He must mean that he is a danger to the other boys and a bad influence on them." Mrs. Gross suddenly became angry.
"Miles? A danger? A bad influence?" she cried. "It's awful to say cruel things about the boy. I'm sure what happened wasn't his fault. He's only 10 years old. You might as well think badly of the little lady. Look at her."
I turned and saw Flora in the doorway. I had left her drawing letters in the schoolroom 10 minutes before. Without ever refusing to do anything, she seemed only to do the things she wanted to do. But maybe she had just followed me because she wanted to be with me. So I gave her a hug and kissed her. Later, I wanted to continue talking to Mrs. Gross, but it was hard to find her, and I began to wonder whether she was avoiding me. At last, I met her in the evening on the stairs. "When we were talking earlier," I said, "did you mean that Miles has never behaved badly?"
"Of course he's behaved badly, miss," she replied. "And it's a good thing too. No boy should be good all the time."
"I understand," I cried. "But could he be bad enough to corrupt other boys?" She stared at me, and in fact, she gave a strange laugh.
"Are you afraid that he'll corrupt you?"
I laughed at her grim joke too, but it seemed a very strange thing to say. The next day, I asked Mrs. Gross, "What was the previous governess like?"
"She was also young and pretty. Almost as young and almost as pretty as you, miss."
"Oh," I said, laughing, "he seems to like us young and pretty."
"Oh, he did," said Mrs. Gross. "It was the way he liked everyone."
She spoke in a sharp voice, but when she saw my surprise, she quickly spoke again in a normal voice.
"That's just the way he behaves."
This was strange. She seemed to be talking about a different person, not our employer. So I asked, "Who are you talking about?" Her face went red, but she replied,
"The master, of course."
I did not know of any other man she might mean, so I quickly forgot about my first thought. But later, I wondered again who she was talking about. "Did the last governess ever worry about how Miles behaved?" I asked.
"She never said anything to me about it," she replied.
"And did she look after the children well?" I went on. Mrs. Gross answered carefully,
"Yes, most of the time. But she's gone, miss, and I mustn't say any more."
"I understand," I said quickly, though I was not sure what she meant. "Did she die here?"
"No, miss. She went away," she replied.
"She became ill, you mean, and she went home?" I said. Mrs. Gross seemed uneasy, but she told me that the last governess had not become ill at Bly. She had left at the end of the year to go home for a short holiday. But at the time when Mrs. Gross was expecting her to return to Bly, she received a letter from the master telling her that the young woman was dead.
"But what did she die of?" I asked.
"He never told me.
But please, miss,"
said Mrs. Gross, "I must get back to my work."